It is Thursday, July 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump tells an audience in Poland he will defend borders and defeat terror.
His talks with the Polish government and with other figures here seem to have brought out a stronger line from him against Russia.
World leaders gather in Germany for the G20 summit, and we preview the new film War for the Planet of the Apes. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump, in his first major public speech in Europe, warned that the values of the West are under attack. He spoke in Warsaw, Poland.
We cannot accept those who reject our values and who use hatred to justify violence against the innocent.
Trump also called on Russia to stop its actions in Ukraine.
We urge Russia to cease its destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, and its support for hostile regimes, including Syria and Iran, and to instead join the community of responsible nations in our fight against common enemies and in defense of civilization itself.
At a news conference earlier with his Polish counterpart, Trump said he believes Russia may have tried to interfere in the 2016 U.S. election, but said others may have been involved. I spoke with reporter Henry Ridgewell in Warsaw and asked him if the criticism of Russia was surprising.
Absolutely. I think today we heard some of the strongest words from President Trump about Russia that we've heard so far in his presidency. He spoke in his speech about the destabilizing effect Russia was having in Ukraine and in Syria, and called on them to enter the League of Normal Nations, as it were, and work towards stabilizing the world. So very strong words there in his speech, much stronger than we've heard recently. So I think one thing we can draw from this trip is that his talks with the Polish government and with other figures here seem to have brought out a stronger line from him against Russia. But as you say, it will be interesting in the coming days as President Trump holds that meeting with Vladimir Putin in Hamburg in Germany and other G20 leaders to see what impact his speech here will have on those meetings.
And what about the reaction to that part of the speech? Because Poland had its own long history of being dominated by Moscow.
That's right. And his words about Russia went down very well with the crowd. They repeatedly chanted his name, Donald Trump, and USA rang out across the crowd of about 5,000. Poland, of course, is very worried about what is happening in neighboring Ukraine. Russia is much closer here than it is to other Western capitals. So I think that fear is felt very acutely here. Article 5 of NATO, that's the collective self-defense. President Trump, of course, qualified that backing with the assertion that other NATO members must pay their way in NATO, as he's insisted since he became president. But I think overall, both sides will be happy with the outcome of today's meeting and speeches. Poland had what it wanted, strong words against Russia, promises to boost gas exports to relieve the monopoly that Russia currently has on those supplies in Eastern Europe. And on President Trump's part, I think obviously he is a divisive leader in Europe. He's not the most popular president the United States has ever had. To get television pictures of crowds chanting his name, I think will give him an image boost, a brand boost ahead of the G20 at a time when he's under pressure both at home and abroad.
Well, just one last question, Henry. Mr. Trump also spoke about how America and Europe have suffered, you know, one terror attack after another, but he said that we're going to get it to stop. Did he offer any plans about or recommendations how both areas of the world, both the U.S. and its European allies, can try to prevent, particularly the, it seems like, rising number of terrorist incidents that we've had in the last few months?
He did speak about the threat of terror. In fact, he spoke of it in very grand terms, of it being almost a clash of civilizations and of values. And he used the Polish example of their fight against Nazism and communism to say that Western civilization will prosper against those threats of terrorism. But this was a speech that was long on philosophy and long on feeling and emotion and history, but somewhat short of detail, I think. There was no details of what steps the United States or Europe indeed should take to try to stem the spate of terror attacks that have hit both countries and continents over the recent months. He did mention his recent visit to the Gulf, where he had called on Muslim countries to join the fight against terror, but there were no other details really of any proposals to, for example, clamp down on cybercrime, on immigration, on online extremism, anything like that. I think perhaps he's saving that kind of detail for the G20, which of course starts tomorrow. President Trump will be meeting with all those G20 leaders to discuss exactly those issues.
That's Henry Ridgewell in Warsaw, Poland. Well, joining me is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, lots of discussion, not surprisingly, about the president's comments, that defense of Western civilization, lots of debate about that. People also using hashtag G20 to talk about, you know, what they hope to hear, what they hope to see happen. But, you know, social media every now and then likes a good chuckle, I guess. And it seems we had another handshake incident, this time in Poland. The president, President Trump, was being greeted by the Polish president. The two there stood shaking hands, and they were joined by their wives. And there's a clip that's floating around. The Polish president, his wife, walks right past Donald Trump, who has his hand out. And she walks over instead to Melania to shake her hand. And the president just sort of stands there, kind of left hanging. And the look on his face, people are just kind of having a good chuckle over this, because clearly he was not pleased to be passed over for Melania. Eventually everybody did shake hands and everybody was all smiles. But I'm looking at just one tweet here, already retweeted 1,600 times, and that's just going up. So Twitter having a bit of a chuckle again over handshake politics, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I think his handshakes are fairly famous at this rate. All right, thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top stories trending. President Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel meet ahead of the G20 summit in Hamburg. France vows to end sales of gas and diesel cars by 2040. Congressman Scalise is back in intensive care, and Human Rights Watch blames the Bangladesh government for secret detentions and deaths. Expanded coverage of those stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Here's some troubling news for people who have anything but type O blood. According to a new study, if your blood type happens to be either type A, B, or AB, you're at a higher risk of a heart attack. The study's findings are based on an analysis of reports of cardiovascular events such as heart attack, coronary artery disease, ischemic heart disease, and heart failure. The reports were divided into two groups, those with type O blood and those with other blood group types. The study found that odds of non-O blood type carriers experiencing all types of coronary events were significantly higher than the group with type O blood. But the analysis also reveals that when it came to fatal coronary events, there was no significant difference between people with type O and non-O blood groups. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Turkey's opposition leader is on a long march for justice. Leaders of the so-called G20 nations, the world's top industrial and emerging economies, meet Friday and Saturday in Hamburg, Germany, for an annual summit that has been devoted to global economic governance. Ahead of the meeting, the International Monetary Fund urged the G20 to avoid myopic nationalistic policies and work together to resolve trade and economic differences. But European specialist Bruce Wilson of Australia's RMIT University tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the summit and side meetings among world leaders will likely be overshadowed by the nuclear and missile threat posed by North Korea.
I think sideline discussions, but I think we will find that the agenda of the G20 is overtaken to some degree by the international security concerns.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel, of course, is host this year. She's leading this G20 meeting in Hamburg. Germany has made climate protection a top priority.
It has indeed, along with the European Union in general.
Is this going to be a contentious issue?
I think there's no doubt that Europe was very disappointed with the decision by the United States President to withdraw from the Paris Agreement. That, of course, is yet to be implemented, so there is still some hope, I think, that it will be a decision that might be reversed, and I don't doubt that President Trump will be under some pressure to rethink his position. But even if he doesn't, I think the Europeans remain deeply committed to the Paris Agreement and will continue to promote it, and will expect other G20 countries to be partners in continuing to pursue that objective.
Previous meetings have also dealt with the issue of free trade, which really hasn't been a big issue. But the United States, under President Trump, has made concerns about free trade deals paramount now. How is this discussion going to go, given what the International Monetary Fund warned just before the meeting, that they wanted to guard against being myopic in their approach to economic issues?
In the initial aftermath of the global financial crisis, the G20 as a group had serious ambitions to provide a new global economic and financial environment, a new framework for managing the global economy that would essentially, in the eyes at least of the European Union, provide for a win-win situation that from a more liberal but better managed global order, all countries would be able to improve their position in world trade. Now, I think, again, President Trump sees this very much as a win-lose situation. And so rather than working for a broad global consensus on these issues, he will be pursuing those matters which he sees very much in the United States' unilateral interest.
Bruce Wilson notes that while many previous G20 summits have been held far away from urban areas, Chancellor Merkel chose downtown Hamburg as the site of this year's meeting. Turkey's main opposition party leader continues a 450-kilometer walk from the capital Ankara to Istanbul, protesting what he says is a country that is rapidly turned into a one-party state. The so-called Justice March is being held ahead of the anniversary of last July's failed coup and resulting crackdown by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The march is becoming a powerful focal point for the opposition, as Dorian Jones reports from Kocaeli, Turkey.
On day 20 of his Justice March, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu still has a spring in his step. The 68-year-old head of Turkey's Republican People's Party has often been criticised for being an ineffectual opposition party leader. Now, Kılıçdaroğlu is galvanising opposition to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and a year-long crackdown on dissent. Volkan Yosunlu, one of the thousands who joined the march, says it has become an inspiration for many. He said this march has already made a difference, and that for 20 days, tens of thousands of people walking together, proclaiming the same message of justice, reflects a growing awareness. He said something positive is emerging from it. The Turkish word adalet means justice, and that is a simple message seen on marchers, banners, placards and T-shirts. Marchers say they are trying to reach across the political divide to bring attention to the thousands of people who have been jailed and lost jobs in Erdogan's crackdown. Zeynep Altaok, deputy leader of the Republican People's Party, says given the scale and scope of the crackdown, the call for justice has a universal appeal.
There are deputies are arrested. There are very many number of journalists, news people are arrested. Also the academics, also the education system is fell apart. The judiciary system also is very much under pressure. So all this together from different levels of society, everybody feels it for them right now. Everybody feels for justice. Everybody seeks for justice.
President Erdogan accuses the marchers of treason and collaborating with terror groups. But as the march goes on, it is picking up more supporters. Many passing motorists sound horns in support. One marcher says she's overwhelmed by the overall support for the march. She says people are waving and kissing them and wishing them the best. She says they hug us with love. They get tears in their eyes. They say, may God help you. The woman also says despite some negative reactions, most people have responded positively. Erdogan still enjoys considerable backing in the country. On the march route, Erdogan supporters blast his campaign song and display a four-finger sign symbolising support for him. Political divisions in Turkey are expected to deepen as more people join the march. Kılıçdaroğlu says opponents of the walk have attempted to exploit those tensions, but he maintains the marchers are committed to peaceful resistance.
Biz asla ve asla şiddete yönelmedik.
He said the people marching with him have never favoured or will favour violence. He said others tried to provoke them into displaying violent behaviour, but failed. The marchers are scheduled to arrive in Istanbul Sunday. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Kocaeli, Turkey.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. The third installment in the new Planet of the Apes films opens in U.S. theaters this month. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, war for the Planet of the Apes continues chimpanzee Caesar's evolution into a leader of his simian people.
You're Caesar. We've been searching for you for so long.
I do not start this war. I fight only to protect apes.
Motion capture actor Andy Serkis returns as Caesar, the chimp who has developed from a young ape into the leader in this third installment. Caesar fights to protect his family, and his attitudes toward humans continue to change in this film. Serkis, known also for his performance as Gollum in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit movies, says his character is beginning to take on the role he seems destined to assume.
Of course, in this one, Caesar, he's older. He's also evolving from being ape-like into more human-like, certainly in terms of his facial expressions, his thinking, his emotions, beginning to feel more human-like, and linguistically he begins to feel more human-like.
The film uses the latest in motion capture technology, something that director Matt Reeves says makes the most of the actors' performances.
The actors are there. I think what happens is a lot of people think, oh, well, you go and, you know, the people who are playing the human characters, they must be playing to tennis balls or something. The actors are there. So we shot in the snow, we shot in the rain, we shot in the freezing cold. Well, Andy Serkis and Steve Zahn, all of the actors, they were there in their mocap suits. So it sounds, the complex part of it is once you shoot actors in their mocap suits, getting everything else you need in order to make those shots come to life.
Woody Harrelson joins the story as Colonel McCulloch, a human who is obsessed with destroying the apes and especially their leader, Caesar. Harrelson says his character is not a cartoon villain, but a man who wants to save his race and his planet.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not just a simple kind of cutout. I think there's a lot to what goes on with him. Couple things that were, that he didn't use that I kind of liked, a couple scenes. But, you watch the final product and it's great.
Andy Serkis says this film has more emotional depth and complexity than previous movies, and he thinks that audiences will love it.
I think this is really powerful, this movie, and it's a very emotional film. I mean, last night watching it, people were literally crying, you know. So it is. It's also got great humor in it. It's an epic. It's a mythic story. I think it's a brilliant piece of brilliant blockbuster, which with heart and a lot of intelligence. So I think people will be moved by it and really care about the characters.
War for the Planet of the Apes is rated PG-13. It opens in U.S. theaters July 14th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. Well, the health of China's Nobel laureate, the dissident Liu Xiaobo, is dramatically deteriorated, according to the hospital treating him for liver cancer in Shenyang, China. Doctors at China Medical University No. 1 Hospital released a statement on Thursday saying that they suspect Liu has a blood clot in one of his calf muscles and that his liver functioning has deteriorated. Liu is 61 and he was sentenced to 11 years in prison in 2009 for co-writing and distributing Charter 08, a petition that called for liberal reforms in mainland China. That is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A Vietnamese court recently sentenced blogger and human rights activist Nguyen Nhoc Nhu Quyen to 10 years in prison. "We are deeply concerned," said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, "about the conviction of peaceful blogger Nguyen Nhoc Nhu Quyen. Also known as Mother Mushroom, she was the recent recipient of a 2017 International Woman of Courage Award at the State Department. Nguyen Nhoc Nhu Quyen was arrested in October 2016 and charged with conducting propaganda against the state under Article 88 of the Penal Code, which has been used to punish activists and critics of the government, according to Human Rights Watch. With the motto, "Who will speak if you don't?", Nguyen Nhoc Nhu Quyen wrote on social and political issues, including land confiscation, police abuse, and freedom of expression. She voiced support for fellow dissidents and publicly campaigned for the release of many political prisoners, including Tran Nguyen Duy Tuc, Nguyen Ngoc Giu, Nguyen Wong Quoc Cung, and Nguyen Hieu Vinh, also known as An Ba Sam. She received a Hellman Hammock grant from Human Rights Watch in 2010 as a writer defending free expression and was named the 2015 Civil Rights Defender of the Year by Civil Rights Defenders. Above all, wrote Human Rights Watch, she advocated for a social and political environment free from fear. The United States calls on Vietnam to release Mother Mushroom and all other prisoners of conscience and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to express their views freely and assemble peacefully without fear of retribution. "We've seen some positive steps on human rights in Vietnam over the past few years," said Ms. Nauert. "However, the trend of increased arrests and convictions of peaceful protests since early 2016 is deeply troubling. Progress on human rights will enable the U.S.-Vietnam partnership to reach its fullest potential."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.